protection is not the only solution for securing our critical infrastructure, but you need to really be prepared on the fact that something may go wrong. You need to take action about it, not only to, you know, avoid impacts or to absorb impact, but also to promptly recover from potential negative impact.
Welcome to In Case of Emergency, your podcast about insights into crisis management and emergency notifications. Your podcast source related to business continuity, emergency response, public alerting, and much more. We believe that sharing information, learnings, insights, and best practices is so important, which is why we're very happy to present this podcast to you. My name is John Davison, and I will be your host for this podcast series, In Case of Emergency.
Alexandra Lazary is a senior key account manager at F24 in Germany. He has worked as a specialist on critical infrastructure protection, resilience and cybersecurity since 2004. With a master's degree in law at the University of Bologna and a PhD in computer engineering, multimedia and telecommunications earned at the University of Florence. In Alexandra's previous role prior to F24, he was the scientific officer for the European Commission Joint Research Centre, where he worked on a policy and initiatives to support the European Programme for Critical Infrastructure Protection, which could be summarised as EPCIP, and which was really there to strengthen Europe's cyber resilience system and offer a fostering for competitive and innovative cybersecurity for the industry. Alexandra is also a fellow in the legal informatics at the School of Law of the University of Lecce. And if that isn't odd enough for you, he's also a lecturer on courses for protecting critical infrastructure at NATO's Center of Excellence Defense Against Terrorism, which is CODAT. And finally, Alexandra has also co-founded the Center for Interdisciplinary Research on Critical Infrastructure Security and Resilience, the CRISR, at the University of Salento in Italy. So welcome, Alexandra.
Thank you very much for inviting me over, John. It's a pleasure to be with you today.
Thank you, Alexandra. So you've got such a wealth of knowledge and experience, in particular in working in Europe in regards to cyber resilience and communication. So it's a real honor to have you as my guest today. So to kick off my first question for today, since you have worked as such a specialist in the critical infrastructure protection, can you please tell us all, what does the Directive on Security of Network and Information Systems, or better known as the NIS Directive, aim to achieve?
Yeah, thank you very much for this question. The directive was promulgated more than 6 years ago, and it's the recognition of the fact that our critical infrastructure are heavily dependent on network and information system. And this network and information system are vulnerable to a number of elements that can really make them, you know, go down or malfunction, or can also lead to, you know, destroying infrastructure. Therefore, after a very long journey that started back in 2004 with the first measures on the fight against terrorism, the Union has decided that in 2016 was the time, you know, to do something together for the security of network and information system. That's why we have this directive. It's a major breakthrough. It's a directive that introduces a number of activities to be performed by the so-called operator of essential services. Among those, you know, risk assessment, you know, and management, of, it's at the core of all the policies of the European Union security agenda, but also introduces one thing that is really is non-existing in previous experiences, that is the mandatory notification of incident. So now these operator of essential services are requested, when certain criteria apply, to notify the government when they've been attacked, by providing a fully fledged report on what happened, and what's going wrong.
So in regards to the NIS2, which has been a recent directive passed by the European Parliament, what are the implications over NIS 1 versus 2, and more specifically, what does it mean for the member states?
Yeah, I mean, first thing to notice is the following. The first NIS directive was promulgated back in 2016, and now you see that already in 2022, the Union is ready for a new policy cycle. So after only 5.5-6 years, already a new version of the directive is coming. This really suggests the first thing to keep in mind, a strong commitment in the fight against, the possibility that our infrastructure are not secure. So a strong commitment on cybersecurity, first of all. Second thing you can immediately notice by looking at the text of the directive is that the number of sectors included in the directive are almost doubled. They go from 19 to 35. So this also shows, once again, the commitment of the Union and all the member states in having all possible sectors of the essential services that are, provided our society covered by the directive, therefore action taken in these areas, and improvement in the way we secure this infrastructure, this essential service.
Okay, understood. So in regards to what are the immediate next steps in closing down NIS1 to moving to NIS2?
So, I mean, the good news is that really the NIS2 builds heavily upon the NIS1. So it will be a matter of, improving the efforts in the direction of securing network information system. There will be the needs from member states to now identify and designate those essential service that falls into the new sectors that are included in the directive. So a lot of work will be in the central governance, because the all the ministers that have specific competencies over every sector will have to assess which companies, which business, which infrastructure in their sector have to be included in the officially designated operator of essential service. This will require quite a long time. So immediately after the directive is, published on the European Gazette and then transposed into the national law, the first task for the government is to, designate a new operator of essential service under the NIS 2.0. The rest, I'm not saying that remains the same, because there is a lot of improvement. Also, there is a differentiation between the type of entities that are covered by the directive. There is essential entities and important entities. So also a ranking has been proposed among, the lifeline, very important, vital services and the important one. So there is kind of a criticality assessment done. And of course, they start with the essential one and then they pass on to the important one.
Okay. And how far does this sort of trickle down from sort of central government into local government and potential external third parties or suppliers to government? Is this something that is really going to trickle all the way down?
I mean, this normally stays, it very much depends. It very much depends on of course, if you have, heavily industrialized area or very big, metropolitan cities, there is always a consultation between the central government and the local government, province and region, because they know much more about what type of infrastructure may be hosted in certain territories. And the granularity is extending quite a lot. Imagine that among the things also the Seveso plants will be included, so all the chemical, biological, and explosive, all the plants that deal with this type of material will also be included, because there is the fear, for example, that this type of industry can be attacked and with huge environmental damages. So not only, a problem only with the delivery of a given service, but with the heavy environmental damages because of breakage of a silos or disruption on a given process that keeps the plant safe and so on and so forth. So really the granularity of the type of business that will be impacted is increasing a lot. Therefore, I foresee, as you said, that local authorities will be involved.
Yeah, okay. So one could say that the NIS2 directive is complementary to the Critical Entity Resilience Directive. And when we think of the risk assessment concerning critical entity resilience, the topic of crisis management inevitably comes up. So how do you think these new directives are going to facilitate crisis management and resilience?
I mean, just to give you an idea, the 16th of December 2020, so while we were still during the pandemic, to me, it's a day to remember for the recent history of the Union, because both the NIS2 and the Critical Entity Resilience Directive were proposed the same day. This also sends a very strong message, how much the Union wants to couple, you know, the resilience and the cybersecurity together. So the two directives have been presented the very same day by the Directorate General that were taking care of their, you know, drafting and preparation. So yes, the Critical Entity Resilience Directive will have a strong impact on crisis management because, you know, it entails a number of measures to be taken to improve on the part of, you know, preparedness and response. So it finally recognizes that, you know, protection is not the only solution for securing our critical infrastructure, but you need to really be prepared on the fact that something may go wrong. You need to take action about it, not only to, you know, avoid impact or to absorb impact, but also to promptly recover from potential negative impact to critical entities. So yes, definitely there will be you know, a huge impact. And also, if you think that also climate change is included, you may imagine how wide is the coverage of the Critical Entity Resilience Directive. It's not only about physical security and industrial accidents, you know, it's also about climate change. So the companies will have to assess whether, you know, a sudden change of the climate condition in their area is going to have an impact on them. And you can imagine we are already experiencing a lot of change of, you know, weather forecast that is driven by the climate change in the Union, where we have a very strange natural event taking place where in places where they weren't taking place before. You know, so we now talk about Medicane, like Mediterranean hurricane. I am from the south of Italy. We have never experienced anything like that. You need to imagine that this infrastructure need to reassess if they are able to withstand this kind of events, because they were not designed to do that, you know, or extreme cold or extreme heat, you know. This will be a game changer, and this will have a huge impact also on the way you handle crisis, because you are not used to handling crisis in, you know, completely changed situation. So yes, definitely.
Okay, well, thank you, Alexandra. It's all been very, very fascinating. And we're coming close to the end of the session, and we've got one final question that I always ask all of the guests on the podcast, and that is aimed particularly at you personally. And I'd like to ask you, Alexandra, what have you learned by working in your profession that you may have adopted as a standard working practice, either in your personal life or perhaps your professional life?
Yeah, I mean, I've learned that life is not linear. You always need to have a plan B, to be prepared that something that you are planning a certain way doesn't really go the way you plan it. Like pandemic has taught us a lot about, you know, how life can change all of a sudden. So on this part, I can tell you that I'm deeply influenced by the fact that when I was really young, right before attending university, I was a volunteer of the Italian Civil Protection. So I've learned a lot also. Part of the resilience, the capability to intervene from that experience, I was, really a game changer for the way I then developed. And, you know, I'm also a radio amateur. So I really like to have a radio always at hand, because if crisis, you know, arises, you need to rely on all technology that it's likely not to be impacted. And of course, this translates into, let's say, family's resilience. There is a number of small measures that I take, you know, at home with my kids and, you know, my family, so that they understand that, you know, something may go wrong and you don't need to wait for the others to save you. You may well save yourself. So since, and a last sentence on that, this is exactly the philosophy we have with our public warning system, IF24, you know very well, that we are providing this platform to the governments because the governments really want to deal with crisis, but with, you know, those situations that requires an intervention. The alerting of a citizen is there because the citizen can really, really get out of the scenario, save themselves, and also give, you know, the first responder, everyone, more time, you know, to intervene in those situations that really need someone to intervene. So that's the philosophy I also apply for myself. If I can do it myself, I'll try to be resilient and not to, you know, like rely on someone else. So I have always, you know, reservoir of water, some food, and so on and so forth. You know, small things.
Always a backup plan.
Yes, always, always.
Being prepared.
Yes.
And being resilient in your personal life. No, that's absolutely fantastic, Alexandra. The best way I think that we all can live is, yes, to be more prepared in our personal lives and be more resilient and think of those additional ways to communicate if the normal infrastructure is not available. And that's really good advice and good tips.
Yeah, I think, you know, that we have been reviewing all these efforts from the Union that also then fall to the member states. All these efforts really require, you know, a lot of forces to be deployed. We are doing a lot to make, you know, the European Union more secure, more resilient. I think that citizen resilience is also a key mechanism that we need to learn and we need to really strongly advocate. People have to be able to take care of themselves on their own, and be reassured that there is forces enough that will intervene in case they cannot do this themselves. So I think this is a very important part of the resilience life cycle that we still need to work on, and it's part of the DNA of F24 because we deal with crisis management and, you know, public warning, and these topics are, you know, are still to be, you know, worked out a lot, and they will be more and more important in the future.
Absolutely. No, I couldn't agree with you more, Alexandra. And at this point, I'd like to thank you for all of your insights, your knowledge, your experience on the NIS directive, both the first release and the second release. And thank you very much, Alexandra. It's been a real pleasure. And I look forward to catching up again with you very soon.
My pleasure. Thank you.
The podcast, In Case of Emergency, Insights into Extensive Crisis Management, is hosted by F24, Europe's leading software as a service provider for incident and crisis management, as well as business messaging. If you have topics or questions that you'd like to have answered, or if you would like to share your experience as a guest on the podcast, then just let us know. Write us your suggestions for future topics, and please include your contact details by emailing us at marketing@f24.com. Thank you for listening, and goodbye until next time.